This CoinWeek podcast is brought to you by PCGS. PCGS grades modern and classic coins from the United States and from across the world, even Canada. To learn how to submit, visit www.pcgs.com. This week on the CoinWeek podcast, it's been 30 years since the launch of the Loonie, I talked to Murray Church. From 1983 to 1993, Murray was the Director of Public Relations at the Royal Canadian Mint. He was there when the Royal Canadian Mint launched the $1 coin. Hi there, Murray. This is Charles Morgan from CoinWeek. Thanks for joining me on the podcast.
You're very welcome.
The Canadian Loonie is celebrating its 30th year in service this week, and I wanted to talk to you, somebody who is directly involved in researching and developing the coin and seeing it through to fruition, about the coin and how it's performed over the years.
Well, it was a heady time at the Royal Canadian Mint. We were on the cusp of introducing the first major change in the country's currency in 75 years, and it was a time when we weren't really sure how well it was going to go. So a lot of work had gone into it. And, you know, when it came time for launch day on the 1st of July on Canada Day, 1987, we had our fingers crossed a little bit. We were pretty confident, but, you know, looking back on it, it looks altogether easy, but at the time it wasn't that easy.
At the time before that coin came into production, Canada circulated a $1 banknote. Now, our continued circulation of a $1 banknote in the United States is a major reason why we have been unsuccessful so far in following Canada's example. When the Royal Canadian Mint and others involved in this project proposed eliminating the $1 banknote in favor of a $1 coin, was that proposal met with much resistance?
Well, that was the key. That was one of the most important things that the government did to help pave the way for the $1 coin. When they announced the $1 coin, they also announced that the $1 note would be withdrawn. And on the basis that the $1 coin would never be successful as long as the $1 note was also in circulation, people would tend to stay with their old ways. And the new coin would not be as successful as it should have been. So they made that decision right up front. We all communicated that right up front, and the public wasn't caught by surprise. But still, you know, there was certainly a certain amount of resistance to be overcome there. But the whole key was it was announced up front that the note would go, and the note did go.
How orderly was the transition from banknote to coin? I assume that the Canadian $1 bill wasn't demonetized.
I don't think the $1 note has ever been demonetized, but the whole thing was choreographed very well between the Canadian Bankers Association, the Department of Finance, and the Mint. And what happened was the Mint made sure that there were ample supplies of the coin in the various different coin depots across the country that the banks could draw on. And so that when the 1st of July came along, the banks actually had physical possession of coins and immediately began to issue them. And they were under instructions by the banks themselves and by the Canadian Bankers Association that as soon as $1 notes came in, for any reason, they were to be withdrawn. They were not to be used again, just simply set aside, and they were to be returned to the Bank of Canada for destruction.
At the time the dollar coin debuted, what were the active circulating denominations of Canadian coins?
We had the same denominations as the United States has at the present time. We had a 1, 5, 10, 25, and those were the most commonly circulated coins. We also had a 50-cent coin, but it didn't circulate. And we had a $1, so-called $1 circulating coin, but it really didn't circulate either. And in fact, when it was decided that we would try again to do a $1 circulating coin, and that brought about the Loonie, one of the thoughts was, well, why couldn't we just simply go back and use the old $1 coin with the Voyageur canoe on it? But the feeling was that that device was far too big and it was too heavy and we needed something lighter, smaller, and more practical. So the plan had been to take the Voyageur canoe design off the old $1 coin and simply reduce it and transfer it onto the new device. But unfortunately, fate intervened, and when the master tools were being shipped from the mint in Ottawa to the production facility in Winnipeg, about 2,000 miles away, the courier company that was carrying these dies lost them. And the RCMP tried to locate them and could not locate them. And so we were faced with a dilemma. What do we do? So we felt that the only really sane thing to do was to remove any concern that the public might have that there could be counterfeits of the coin that might appear, because in as much as the dies have been lost. And as unlikely as that was, we still felt the perception was a reality, that could very well be the public perception. And so we decided we would have to come up with an all-new design. Well, the coin dies were lost around the beginning of 1987, and we only had a few months, therefore, to decide on a new design, get it into production, and get the coins made. And the only thing we had that was ready to go was this design of the common loon, designed by a fellow named Carmichael, and that was on the shelf, and that was ready to go. So we decided that we would go with that. And we were all kind of concerned in some respects, because what we had been counting on was the recognition factor of the Voyageur dollar, that people had grown up with that as kids. They'd gotten them as birthday gifts and Christmas gifts and so on. And there would have been a certain familiarity and a certain comfort in having that design on the new coin. Well, we decided that wasn't going to happen, and now we would have this loon design. And at the time, the Prime Minister was Brian Mulroney, and I had visions of the thing being called the Mulooney, and we would have a real PR problem on our hands. But anyway, it didn't occur that way. We got the coins made and out into circulation, and the public readily accepted them.
The 50-cent coin in Canada, much like the 50-cent coin in the United States, does not circulate. Did the lack of any commercial use for the 50-cent coin cause concern in the Canadian government that a new dollar coin might also fail?
Concerning the second question, no, there were no concerns that because the 50-cent wasn't circulating, the new $1 coin would not circulate. It was very much looked upon as being a very different kind of situation. The reason the 50-cent coin had not circulated was that the infrastructure for coins in Canada had not adapted itself to the 50-cent coin. So there were no vending machines that took the 50-cent. There were no bus companies and coin handling companies that were really set up to handle the 50-cent coin. And so de facto, people were just simply using 25-cent pieces and $1 banknotes, and that was considered to be sufficient. And the idea that the 50-cent coin would really be useful, especially since there was nothing really in the coin handling infrastructure in Canada, that kind of went by the boards.
Did the Canadian 50-cent coin have utility back during the period that it was a silver coin? Or did the rise of vending machines and the coin's debasement eliminate that need?
No, not really. The vending machine industry never really set up for the 50-cent coin, even when it was made out of silver. And the fact that it was made out of silver, of course, back in the day when silver was so inexpensive, nobody gave that any thought anyway. It was only when in the mid-60s when silver prices spiked that, of course, most modern mints had to stop striking circulating coins in silver and went to largely nickel or cooper nickel alloys to do that.
What lessons do you think Americans should learn from your experience with the loonie in order to reform our coinage, where essentially we have a penny, which Canada has already eliminated, a nickel, dime, and quarter, and nothing else that circulates?
Well, the answer to this is pretty simple to start with. You simply got to eliminate the $1 banknote. That's going to be more difficult now because the fact that the vending industry and transit industries and so on have have gone to sophisticated banknote acceptance machines that dispense change and everything. And so there will probably be some resistance to the idea that the banknote might go and that they would have to start handling this, let's say, the Susan B. Anthony dollar for the sake of argument. And I don't think that the United States would have to change that device. It would just simply be, you know, this device has struggled on for many years, and it's people don't dislike it. It's a nice-looking coin, but it's never going to be as successful as long as the banknote's in circulation, and therefore to save money and to make it easier for people, we're going to eliminate the banknote. And that was, in fact, the saving of taxpayers' dollars, that was, in fact, we proved this through public opinion research, that this was the most compelling argument that we had in our communications with the public. We had figured out that there would be three things that would work in favor, or that would be a good measure of the success of the dollar, and that was, to what extent would the public find the coin useful? In other words, its utility. Secondly, to what extent would the public find the coin aesthetically pleasing? And thirdly, to what extent would the public respond to the argument of tax savings? And we thought, in fact, that that would be the order that they would prefer. Those would be the arguments in exact order of preference, that first it would be utility, second aesthetics, and third would be tax savings. We were entirely wrong. We did public opinion polling on a regular basis up to the introduction of the coin and afterward, and it demonstrated to us that the public responded first and foremost to the tax savings, secondly to the utility, and thirdly to the aesthetics. So it's clear that if the United States were to eliminate the $1 banknote and accompany that with a good information campaign to demonstrate the tax savings, that might be pretty compelling.
A few weeks ago, I had two lobbyists from the Dollar Coin Alliance on the Coin Week podcast, and we discovered the potential for reintroducing the dollar coin into circulation in the United States. And one of the things I brought up when I talked to them was about a project I kicked off online a few years ago, where I would ask collectors to join me and spend $100,000 in dollar coins. That project succeeded, and another attempt is now underway. But one of the things that I learned, and I learned this pretty quickly, is that the $1 denomination does not have enough spending power to serve as a standalone purchasing unit of money. If I wanted to buy a lunch in dollar coins, for example, I would need to carry a roll of them just to have enough money to cover the tab. And it's much easier to carry cash than dollar coins in that example, but even easier to use debit or credit cards. So I wanted to ask you, given that the $1 and $2 coins are realities in Canada, what types of transactions do you find yourself using these coins for, and in what context do these coins make sense, realistically speaking?
Well, before we go on to that, I'll certainly be glad to describe some ways I use the $1 and $2 coins here in Canada. But actually, you touched on another point that's very important, and that is it all comes back to the purchasing power of the currency and the utility of the currency. So if coins don't keep up with the cost of living in terms of the denominations that are available and the purchasing power, then the utility of the coinage system begins to go down. And that's one of the biggest reasons why we at the Canadian Mint advocated to the government at the time that there be a $1 coin. And subsequently, I'm sure the same argument was made, because I was no longer there, but the same argument was made to the government to have the $2 coin. And because at the end of the day, that's what you want a monetary system to do. You want a currency system that serves the needs of the people who use it, and you want it to be so effective that people don't even think about it. And I think that Canadians actually do enjoy using a $1 and a $2 coin because of the utility. So what kind of utility? Where are the things that I do on a daily basis for a $1 and a $2 coin? Well, parking meters downtown, all of them that I can think of take the $1 coin, all the parking meters on the streets. I don't think they take the $2 coin, but the $2 coin is also accepted in vending machines that are installed on private parking lots. Those machines dispense vouchers for parking, and you can pay for those parking vouchers with anything from a 25-cent coin, again, a 25-cent coin, a loonie, or a toonie. So that seems to work really, really well as well. Transit riders who pay cash fares, $1 and $2 coins are used all the time in that scenario. Purchase of a daily newspaper, again, $1 and $2 coins, and there are many vending machines that are owned by newspaper companies that will accept the $1 coin. Not so much the two, but certainly the one. So it is for these relatively smaller purchases where speed and convenience are paramount that these higher denomination coins come in handy.
You bring up a point that's very interesting to me. When you said that the Royal Canadian Mint advocated for higher denomination coins to keep coinage in Canada relevant. One of the things that fascinates me is that the United States Mint, under at least the past three or four generations of senior leadership, has produced nothing, not even a working document or a study that it can take to Treasury and then to Congress to advocate on behalf of our country increasing the value of its circulating coins, or at least reforming its coinage so that our coins won't be forever locked into this early 20th century paradigm that is seen with each passing year, the utility of our coins being less and less. Now, I understand that in our country, coinage laws come from Congress and are then carried out by the Mint, but legislation isn't produced in a vacuum. The Mint's leadership has a role to play in ensuring the viability of the national coinage for the future. I can't imagine a situation where the heads of a major bureaucracy don't see as part of their mission the preservation of the institution in which they serve. And then when you go to the World Mint Directors Conference, you see the heads of the other mints raise the issue that the mints need to work together to ensure the survival of the industry against the face of rising inflation, the digitization of money, and the powerful banknote lobby, whose low-denomination currency is a long-term threat to the continued survivability of coins.
Well, I don't think the government, it's not the job of government to sort of sustain its national mint, you know what I mean? It's the mint is there to produce things that are useful to the population. And but to go back to that sort of how do you get past the point of inertia? We've had these coins for so many years, we haven't changed it, therefore, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. How do you get past that point? Well, when we were doing our own studies for the $1 coin, we looked at all, of course, we didn't look at the United States because they didn't have a higher denomination circulating coin. So that was something that we just ignored. But we looked at countries like Germany and Switzerland and France and the UK and Japan and Australia and tried to see what was their highest denomination of circulating coin that actually circulated, and how did that value of that coin, how did it compare with its purchasing power in the country, and how did it compare with the average hourly wage in the country? So that you would have some sense of the purchasing power of the highest denomination coin. And that was the basic thrust of the research that was done by the Royal Canadian Mint at the time. Our head of manufacturing at that time was Dennis Cudahy, and Dennis did a really super job of gathering together all of that information. And with that information, sat down with the Department of Finance and was able to say, look, we don't know what the banknote system costs, but we would imagine that to run the $1 note in terms of issuing new notes and then, of course, destroying the old ones has to be fairly significant. And how does this stack up with the coin? Well, we said, look, we've done wear testing and everything. The coins are going to last 20 years in circulation at least. And although they cost an awful lot more than the banknotes, we ended up running the numbers, and it was going to save something like $40 million over the life of the coin. So we said to the government, look, you can save $40 million on the one hand, and then you can you'd be modernizing the banknote system by making the $2 note the lowest denomination of note. And you will also, at the end of the day, have a significant capture of additional funds through seniorage, because the banking system has to buy these coins, not giving them away, And the difference, of course, between the cost of manufacturing the coins and the face value will be the seigniorage, and you will also capture that. Now, I don't recall whether that was part of the $40 million or not. It might have been. But it turned out that running the $1 banknote in circulation, sending them out, getting the used ones back, destroying the used ones, that's a fairly expensive proposition. And the banknotes at the time, as I recall, only had a lifespan of 3 months. It was a very, very short period of time because they were the most heavily used banknote. So all of these things, once we had a good sit-down with the Department of Finance and we went through all of these numbers in relation to other countries and then looked at the economics of what our own $1 note was and our own $1 coin would be, the whole thing became pretty compelling.
Do you see a future where Canada might eliminate the $5 banknote and introduce a $5 coin?
That's a really good question. I honestly don't know. I don't know even with whether or not the Royal Canadian Mint is even looking at that right now. It's very hard to say. I think the $2 coin was kind of not too much of a leap, but I think a $5 would be a very significant change, and I don't know whether or not the public would be how receptive the public would be to that. It's something that would have to be really, really researched well so that if you did go ahead with that, you would be going ahead with it in the certainty that the public really wanted it. And I don't sense that there's any great desire for such a coin at the present time.
So as a veteran of the minting industry, I'd like you to put on your futurist hat and answer the following question. Will there be a role for coins in the major world economies 100 years from now?
You know, if I had a crystal ball as good as that, I'd be a billionaire. I don't really know. We'll just have to wait and see. There's always going to be an attraction for having physical currency. Physical currency psychologically relates well with people. People relate well to that. As one German fellow once told me, remember when it came to coins, he said, oh, there'll always be a spot for coins because, you know, coins are physical and tangible and just like paper currency. And he said, you know, electronic currency just doesn't give you that same satisfaction. So it's not just a question of the fact that electronic money is becoming cheaper and cheaper. It's people's psychology is involved here as well. And in an age when we're all concerned more and more about privacy and so on, physical currency gives us anonymity, and it helps protect our privacy. So I think people ought not to lose sight of those two things. And if they don't, I think coins and banknotes too, for that matter, could be around for a long time to come.
Well, Murray, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me about the launch and the legacy of the Looney, a coin that has become an icon.
We were so thrilled at the time when a newspaper journalist in the province of Saskatchewan started to call it the Looney. We didn't call it that. It was a journalist in Saskatchewan, and when he did that and it caught on, we knew that we had a winner.
Thanks for joining us.
You're entirely welcome, Charles. Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please share it with your friends. Remember, you can download all 70 episodes of the Coin Week podcast for free from the iTunes Store. For Coin Week, I'm Editor Charles Morgan, signing off. Happy collecting.